Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another episode of The Real with Faye Single Mom. I'm your host, the Faye Single Mom herself, Ms. Jennifer Pink, and today's show is all about dealing with behavior issues. Today on the show, I have three amazing women. I have Ms. Lisa Gibbs, I have Ms. Tracy Allen, and I have Ms. April Hicks. And we are all going to talk about behavior. What to do when they're acting out in public with the tantrums, when is it discipline, when is it too much, and how to keep our sanity through it all, right? So before we get started, let me introduce each one of my guests. Ms. Lisa Armstrong Gibb, known as the Kid Whisperer to some, is a unique throw-the-box-away kind of educator with over 35 years' experience working with youth and families. Her roles have included babysitter, nannies, school teacher, private school administrator, women and children's counselor, advocate, mom, and grandma. I do not believe that you're a grandma, but say hi to everybody, Lisa.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
No problem. No problem. And next up, we have Ms. Tracy Allen. Tracy has 18 years of experience in the education field. She holds a BA in liberal arts with a concentration in English and a minor in psychology. She has taught a variety of students on all educational levels. She has extensive experience working with students that have emotional and behavioral issues as a content area inclusive educator. She also has personal experience with this as well, as her son was diagnosed with ADHD at the age of 5. Say hi to everybody, Tracy.
Hi, everyone.
And last, certainly not least, is Ms. April Hicks. April is a 34-year-old single mom to an awesome 3-year-old big boy. He's not a baby anymore. She is a jack-of-all-trades, a makeup artist, licensed esthetician, certified bartender, former notary public, phlebotomist in training, and going to school for nursing. I think I'm just tired reading that. Originally from Los Angeles, but residing in Altadena for the past 12 years, she is a lover of life, animals, a novice traveler, and an avid learner on how to do more for the environment. Although she is passionate about many different things, her son is number one priority, teaching him to love himself, how to treat others, be respectful and compassionate towards humanity in general, is her full-time day job. Hello, Ms. April.
Hello, hello, hello. Thank you for having me.
I'm excited to have all of you ladies. So, ladies,
yes,
let's just get right into the meat of it, behavior issues. Why? Like, why do they have to lose their mind? That's how I like to call it.
I don't know about losing minds. I feel like it's a lot of different aspects to it, to where they can have behavioral issues. As you said, my son is 3. He's been in therapy almost a year. This coming October will be a year. As a matter of fact, we just met our new therapist yesterday. I think for him, at such a young age, having so many different changes, and when I say changes, I mean like people in and out of his life. That is the number one factor of that, and last year when it really started to become an issue, he lost like his friends in school. He was in a program and they aged out of the program, so he lost 3 of his really close friends at school plus both of his teachers at the same time. So it was a big transition, and it just, you know, it kind of messed up his consistency. So I think a lot of people, they don't really realize how important consistency is for children, especially of a younger age, even older age, but especially for younger age children. So I think that's kind of where it fell for my son and our kind of, I guess, our journey with behavioral issues and behavioral therapy. But yeah.
Okay. So the consistency and everything just kind of shifting a little too much, you think, is kind of what caused all of it. What do you ladies think, Tracy and Lisa?
Well, this is Lisa here. What I think, you know, in my experience as an educational consultant and going in and doing parent coaching with families, I found that the changes in behavior happen if there's any dietary issues going on, food intolerances. Sometimes the child is not getting enough sleep, so they're operating under deprivation, and people don't realize how many hours of sleep children do need. And there's no set routines or structures in the house. That can cause kids, because they need that structure and consistency and structure in order to feel safe. They have to know what's expected of them, what's required of them.
Okay.
I agree with that, but outside factors can cause behavioral issues as well. You know, like having a lot of changes in their life, people dying, moving, that type of stuff can also cause behavioral issues as well.
Absolutely.
Consistency is needed, though. No matter what you're doing, you need to be consistent with it.
Right. And you know, I actually, you know, and I have four kids. I have four kids now. But I didn't have behavioral issues too much when they were small. You know, like I didn't have, you know, the tantrums outside or the throwing things or the biting. You know, I didn't have too much of that. But I got a teenager now. And Jesus, he can come fix it, because this is a whole new beast. And I think, you know, sometimes we don't realize, like, they go through so many developmental changes, you know, and it's like you get your kid and they're one way and you're like, oh, okay, they're going to be this way, like, forever. And then you come home one day and it's like a new person and you're like, wait. What just happened? What did you do with my child?
Mm-hmm. Well,
you know,
for me, it's like, a lot of people talk about the terrible twos, and I tell people I don't know what the terrible twos are. I know about the horrific twos, because I swear I was about to pull my hair out when my son turned two. I was like, terrible twos? No, this is a nightmare. Like, it was like a night and day. He turned from this quiet, sweet, loving child. I mean, he still was loving, but he was like literally bouncing off the walls, and I couldn't understand what the heck was going on. You know, I was just like, this child is going to kill himself, and then I'm going to die in the process, just worrying. Like, he would literally, seriously, like, he would jump off walls, he'll climb things.
Oh, yeah.
He would be like, he just, I don't know what happened, drove my brother's car down the street and knocked into the neighbor's house at two.
Oh, no.
Like, yes, because they didn't think that he could change the gear, so they were cleaning the car, and he was sitting in there, and he switched the gear into neutral and was on a hill. The car went flying down the road. Thankfully, my brother was able to jump in the car and kind of swerve there. It would have been a really bad accident, but I remember taking him to the doctor, and it was this Asian, his pediatrician was an Asian lady, and I was like, he needs to go on some Ritalin, like, now. You know, I'm like, I can't handle this. I'm not made out for this. And and she was like, she completely insisted that she would not put him on any medication. And I'm like, if you don't, I'm going to have to commit myself, because I cannot handle it. This is being real, real, real right now. I just could not imagine that would be the rest of my life, you know, because he was not disrespectful. He was not, none of that. It was just that he was really, really active. And I begged, like, I was practically begging her to put him on something. Like, he needs to calm down. You know, I was in college still. I was working two full-time jobs. I'm like, no, I can't. I can't deal with this. And she flat out refused. She was like, he's a boy. He has energy to burn off. Just put him outside during the daytime. Let him run around wild. I'm like, I have to actually sit out there with him because he would run off the cliff. You know? I lived on the hill. I was like, this child would literally run off the cliff if I even turned my back. But I am happy that she actually refused to put him on medication. That was the best thing that could ever happen because it made me take the time to educate myself. Because at that time, I was in nursing school. I wasn't even in education. I was in nursing school at the time. And so I started doing my research about ADHD. I started really meeting up on Ritalin and seeing what the side effects was. And then I started meeting kids that were on it. And I was like, ooh, no. I think I prefer my active child. I don't want my child walking around looking like a zombie. So, yeah, I had to learn how to do a lot of behavioral modification. And I had to learn patience more than anything else. I had to learn to be patient and learn who my child was and how to deal with the issues that he was having and not be reactive, but be proactive.
Those are the main things that I found in my practice as well. When you maintain that consistency and you realize and take ownership as the parent, and making those small changes can affect big changes in our children. So having that consistency is really, really good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So consistency is key.
It is key.
I'm still learning that. Like, I'm still learning that. I mean, I can relate when you say it was a lot to deal with. Like, my son, being that he is 3 now, he'll be 4 at the end of next month, and he was bouncing off of every single wall you can think of. He was climbing up the couch. He was jumping off the couch. He still does it, even to this day. And it's funny because my mom, every now and again, she would say, oh, I need to put him on meds. And I'm thinking, like, no, he's 2 at the time, or he's 3. You know, and he's a boy. He has a lot of energy. And
exactly.
I'll never forget it. Just this past Mother's Day, we were at my brother's house, and my brother has 2 daughters. They are 9 and 7, and he's the baby out of all the grandchildren, and he's the boy out of all the grandchildren. So he's playing with them, running around, jumping off the couch. He's doing what they do. And my mom was like, oh, my son didn't do that. My brother's standing there like, Mom, I'm pretty sure I did. You know what I mean? Now he's 3 years old. Like, this is the type of stuff that he does, you know. But it's funny because she's, you know, my mom, she's 60, and she's like, you know, she has that old school mentality of, you know, you don't have any wants. You don't have this. You don't have that. And now so much has changed. You know what I mean? Like, so much has changed, and I don't want to parent my son that way. I want him to be able to express himself and tell me how he feels. I want him to be able to jump and play and run. I don't want him to necessarily break a bone, but, hey, if that's kind of what it takes for him to understand this is your body, you hurt your body by doing this, you know, I want you to have fun, but also be safe while doing so. You know, he has to learn lessons just the same. I can't shield him from everything. So that's my thing. Like, I want him to be totally free to be a kid, and that's what we are lacking today. We have so many different types of distractions, social media, all the technology. A lot of kids don't go outside and play anymore. Like, when we were growing up in the 80s, we played outside. I rode my bike, rode in the street with the boys playing football, all kind of just craziness. But now you don't see that too often. That's because everybody's in the house, everybody's on their gadgets and, you know, doing whatever they're doing. And I want them to still have that freedom as a child, because these years are going to pass by so fast. And it's just like you said, Jennifer, as soon as you feel like you mastered kind of one thing, as soon as you feel that way, boom, something else hits you, and you're like, oh, what is this? You know what I mean? I know, right? Because now, by him being so young, I'm still seeing it. And I mean, seeing it even more because he's my child. You know, I have 5 nieces, and they were totally different. Like, they were not as energetic and just so full of extra life. You know what I mean? He is a bundle of joy. He is probably in my friend's backyard right now running and playing. They have a chicken coop. He's probably going all kind of crazy right now. But, I mean, I want him to to be free. Even as a child, I was allowed to be free in a certain, you know, certain aspect. My dad, I lived in Santa Monica Beach, you know, so I was able to run and play in the sand, in the water. I was able to do everything that I kind of wanted to do, especially with my dad, because he was always there. So it's interesting because, oh, my God, it's like a never-ending story. So I totally understand.
Yeah. So you bring up a very interesting point to this whole conversation because, you know, we all have parents, of course, right? Lisa's pretending to be a grandparent, so we're just going to pretend. But
I have four.
Yeah, you sound like my mom, and nobody believes her. So, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, like, it seems like it's just a totally different way of life from the way we were raised and the way children are raised today. Like, and I think, you know, some people have taken it too far away from what we had. And,
yeah,
you know, some people are, you know, still stuck a little bit too much. And it's,
yeah.
You know, I know when I had my kids, I had to find that balance. And it took a while.
Yeah.
And I think people don't understand, you know, like you think, oh, I'm becoming a parent, and then, like, I know what I'm going to do. And then you're like, oh, wait, but I don't know what to do. Like, where's the manual? Like, where's the instructions?
Yeah.
Where's the rules? And they don't exist. And it's just like, you know, I remember I wanted my kids to, you know, develop. One thing that, you know, I loved about my childhood, which I think my mother hated once I got older, but I knew, you know, I was given choices and I was given a voice, you know, even if it was against what everybody was saying, I still had a voice. The only problem was, is that I wasn't always respectful with my voice.
Gotcha.
You know, I thought we was equal when I used my voice. So I have, you know, I'm learning how to balance that because I look at my oldest daughter and she has a little too much of a voice. Like, she has that disrespectful voice. And then I look at, you know, like my second child and my third child, and they have a voice, but they're a little more respectful with their voice. And it was because I had to learn how to balance giving you choices and giving you a voice with, but don't talk to me crazy.
Yeah.
I'm still your mama. Like,
yeah.
Hold up.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so I think that's a lot of what we're seeing is, you know, people not wanting to do what their parents did, but then they go, like, way too far. You know, like just think about it. When we were growing up, it was not okay to throw a fit in the grocery store. Like, that was just not okay. It didn't matter who you were with. Like, you were just not, you just knew. Don't act a fool in public. Say that for something.
Yes.
Somebody else. Like, no.
Yes.
Whereas now, it's almost like, sometimes I go in the store and I see kids and I'm like, who's the parent? Like, wait, what just happened? You know?
Exactly,
you guys
exactly.
Know,
yeah, you know, there's different parenting styles, of course. You have a permissive parent, you know, the one that gives in and caters to their child. They put their child's priorities above their own and sometimes even their spouse. They're often seen as the Disneyland parent, the let's go have fun. But then you have that parent that's the authoritarian parent. You know, they totally make all the decisions for the child, and they use that punishment and reward system. Pretty much they run the household, you know, and the child knows you better not do anything, say anything, look at anything. But then you have that authoritative parent. You know, the one that sounds like what your mother was, because this parent does give the child choices, but you help them within a safe environment with making choices, and you limit those choices depending on how old the child is. If you have an older, like you have a teenager, you know, you're going to probably give them a little bit more choice than you would a four-year-old. And so you allow that child to make decisions within the house and the family. You know, you're looking at the children based on their development. And children are going to act out. They're going to get away with whatever they can get away with. So the child that's allowed to throw that tantrum in the store, it becomes the norm for the parent. Then they just expect it. So when it happens, they turn into that, you know, punishment type parent versus one that gives discipline on a daily basis. And there is that difference between discipline and punishment.
Well, let's talk about it since you brought it like right up. What is the difference between discipline and punishment?
Okay, well, with punishment, think about what the root, the beginning of that word is. It's punish, right? So when you think of punishing, the purpose of that is to inflict a penalty for some sort of offense. And oftentimes parents use that as an opportunity to spank their child. So it's more punitive in nature. And the focus of punishment is tends to be what they've done in the past. Things have just kind of built up, that type of thing. And the attitude that the parent has is one of frustration. You just had it. You've had enough. You can't take it anymore. Boom. They're putting in the punishment. But what is the emotion that comes out of that in the child is one of fear and guilt. So you've got that iron hand, the child's fearful, and then they comply within that. Meanwhile, on the flip side of that, you have discipline. Now, the purpose of discipline is to teach or to train. You're going for correction, you know, based on maturity. So you're looking at future asks. You're looking at what kind of adult do I want to raise? What type of adult do I want to help create? And then whatever characteristics and trait, good traits you want them to have, you instill that through your discipline. So you're coming from an attitude of love and concern and care. And what that child gets from discipline is they feel safe. They feel security. They're not going to like it. They're not going to always like what you do and how you do it, but they have an overall sense of security and safety versus the fear and guilt that you get with punishment.
Okay. Tracy, do you have anything to add to that?
No, I agree with what she's saying, that, you know, there is a difference between punishment and discipline, and I believe in discipline. I believe that you deal with problems as they come up. I have been the punishment parent before, where you let things that your child do, it builds up over time, and then you react out of anger, and that's not a good place to react from in any situation. So it's best that when something happens that you know, you deal with it immediately so that the child can use it as a growing tool, as an educational tool to know what to do in the situation this time around. So I think discipline is the best way to go. Do I still spank? Well, my daughter's 13 now, so I don't spank anymore. But I am a parent who has used corporal punishment, and I don't apologize for it. I think it has its place, as long as you're not abusive.
Right. And I think that it's all about the balance.
Exactly.
And some kids just require some things that other kids don't. You know,
that's
like
true.
Like my not my youngest anymore, but my son, he's just one of those kids that, like, if you just look at him, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
Like, oh my gosh, what did I do? You know, and then I have my daughter, which is on the other end of the spectrum, who's like, let me test this until she snaps, you know? And it's just like, okay, you got two different people with two different personalities, and you have to learn how to navigate, you know? And I think, you know, what you're saying is right. Like, I noticed with my daughter, who's much older, right? She's a teenager. I have those conversations. And, you know, I'm trying to show her and teach her and give her the big picture.
Right.
You know, children see the little picture. They see the right now, this is what I'm thinking or this is what I want. I don't understand anything else. And then there's times when I have to, you know, like, the mama, hold on, let me help you re-understand this.
They will
definitely
try you. Yeah, they'll definitely try you, especially girls, because it's so different. With me raising, because my son is 23, my daughter is 13.
Oh, wow.
Okay. Yeah.
my son is 23.
Yeah. So it's like night and day, complete opposites, raising a boy from raising a girl, at least in my case.
My son looks at me
and he goes, Ma, you're so lenient on her. You were so much tougher on me. I'm like, listen, I'm old now.
You know, now, huh?
I said, remember how old you are and remember how old she is, and then take my age in between that. You know, I'm like, I don't have the time. And I said, dealing with her is so much. She has ADD. And all this stems from medication that I got during my pregnancy. A lot of it is, that's where they're getting their ADHD and ADD from. But she is completely different. Like, the things that he would have done when he was younger, she doesn't do that kind of stuff. You know what I mean? So there's no need for me. I can relate to her on a different level. Like, you talk about having, you know, having to pull your daughter up. We call it life lessons in the South. That's what we call it. I'm like, okay, you need to sit down and we need to have a life lesson. And when I say that, she knows that, you know, I'm at the point where, hey, if you don't change, there are going to be some serious consequences. You know, she's a teenage girl, and they will try you. That's what they do. They will try you. But she would only go but so far, never to to the extent of disrespect, total and absolute disrespect, because it has been instilled in her that she should have respect for me as her parent and other adults, you know. But they will try to get away with some things that they know they really are not supposed to be doing, and usually a look or the tone of my voice will pull her back, but there are some times when I really have to sit her down and be like, listen, young lady, you know, like, young lady, remember that, you know, how old are you again?
You know, so everybody knows this show is for single mothers, right? That's the platform that I speak on, and I just, you know, there's so much of a difference when it was just me and them to now that I'm married and there's a male presence. Like, sometimes I'm like, wait, how are you able to do that? Like, what just happened? Like, you didn't have to scream. You didn't have to holler. Like, you know, and I mean, with all the kids, but especially my daughter, and that's not even her father, you know, and I just noticed she will not test him as far as she tests me. But she's like, I'm going to stop right here. You know, and even my son, you know, like how you were talking about, how we were talking about earlier about consistency. And, you know, I'm not that old yet. You know, I feel like I'm ancient, but I'm not. But, you know, you get tired. Three kids in, you're just tired, like, period. Like, tired. Like, if y'all are ganging up on me, like, hold on a second.
Yeah, and but, you know, that's what causes that, though, sometimes, is that the child learns when, you know, when she knows when you're tired. She knows when you're going to give in a little easier.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Having that other person to, like, tag team when I'm, like, out of it.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah,
he's been able to come in with my son. He was my baby, you know, and I didn't realize how much I was babying him. Like, I had no cognitive awareness of it. Like, what do you mean? Like, he's a big boy, huh? And now, like, a year later, just to see how much dramatically different my son is in a year, like, he gets himself dressed, and I was like, well, yeah, I knew he could do that, but he did that? Like, oh, okay, that's interesting. You know, and it's just because I don't have to do everything. And I think that, you know, like, that's something that as a single mom that we have to remember. It's okay to get help, you know. And if you're not married, you know, you may not have the help in your home every day, 24/7. But, you know, even before I got married, I started to get help in, you know, close friends of mine who were married, I started to let my kids go over their house, you know, every other week or whatever, just because it gave me a break and then it gave them a different picture. And you know, like they, and it was friends that they respected and that they loved and they admired. And then when things happened in, at home, I could call, you know, the daddy over there and he could intervene. And he could give my kids something else that I was just like, I don't know what to do. Like, come get them. Like, I don't even know what to say. What's going on? So I think we have to remember that, like, it is a lot for one person, especially if you have more than one. Like, it's a lot.
Mm-hmm. It is.
So it's okay to get help. And it's okay, you know, like April, you know, she takes her son to behavior therapy. That's okay.
It is. You know, it is. I totally agree. Mm-hmm.
I love it. I mean, just be honest, April. Like, how many people were like, why would you take your son? Like, what's the problem?
Oh, I had a few people. Actually, I had more men than women. But I had my best male friend, even his father. Even his father, he said, well, he doesn't need that. And I'm thinking to myself, like, well, how would you know? You spend not much time with him at all. You know what I mean? And I hate to say it like that, but it's the truth of the matter. And honestly, I had to break down and tell him, like, I think, like, the end of last month, hey, part of the problem, too. You know, our son doesn't see him that much. And we go, we spend a little bit of time, and then we break for months on end. And I always leave the door open. I've never been rude, disrespectful to him. I've known him for 17 years. Next month makes, like, 17 years we've known each other. And we just, I don't know what it is. We just can't come to where we can communicate about our child, like, consistently, if you will. You know, I don't ask much. I pretty much take care of everything for my son. He doesn't pay anything for him. He does not contribute at all. However, it's just like a phone call would not ruin your day. You know, once a week. It wouldn't ruin your day. Once a week for a couple minutes out of the day. He's 3 years old. All he wants you to know is he has cars, and that's it. You know, so I really don't bother him too much. I don't really, like I said, I've never been disrespectful, never called him out of his name or anything like that, but we just can't come to a common ground on communication about our kid. And he's supposedly the baby for him. I have no idea now what's going on there, but you know what I mean? It's just, it's so crazy to actually be in this position, and it breaks my heart because I had my dad. And I would think because my son's father didn't have his dad as regularly as he should have had his dad, why wouldn't you do better? You know what I mean? Especially when you don't have the drama and things like that to go off of. Like, yeah, well, wouldn't you want better or do better for your kids? It's not like you have much to do anyway because you're really doing everything. All I ask for is a phone call once a week, check on and see how his school's going, and that's pretty much the gist of it right now. But it's just, it's interesting because I never in a million years would have thought that this would have been my life today. You know, I wanted to be married. I wanted to have multiple children, 2 to 3 kids, and call it a day. And that was just not what was happening. I did not take heed to the signs, ladies. I did not take heed to the signs. And it's just being real. You know, I promise you, it's just being so real.
But at least you can admit it.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because, you know, like I said, I've known him since we were kids. You know, we were kids. So it's just one of those things where it's like, what is going on here? Like, I just wouldn't have thought that this would have been the way we would have turned out. And it's not like we're beefed out or anything like that. We're cool, but we just don't talk at all, like really at all, hardly ever. It drives me absolutely insane, but I had to actually let him know, like, I can't allow you to be back and forth in his life. You need to be here or you need to be away. And that's my opinion because I see what it does to my son. And we've made so much progress within the past year, well, 11 months to almost a year, and to go backwards. And I have to, mind you, I'm doing everything by myself. I go to school, I work, I do a little bit of everything. So it puts a damper in what we're doing collectively, me and my son, what we're doing collectively. Like, it just does. He called a couple weeks ago. My son went to school the next day. He had a funky kind of day. I mean, not to say it's always about that. But
right,
that's the only one thing that has changed. You know what I mean?
Right.
So
right,
it's just one of those things where it's like, I think you need to, either you need to be here or you don't. And I didn't want to get to that point, but I have to do that because I have to protect my son. You know what I mean? And I have to protect my son from any and everybody. That's the job of a parent. You know, even if it's against the other parent, you have to protect your kid. So I have to do, I feel like I have to do that. And I hate that I have to feel like that, but it's kind of the reality of where we are right now. So it's just, you know, I don't know what the future might hold.
And, you know, children, children get their sense of self from how they relate to their parents, right? So if you have a single parent and the other child is is absent, that child internalizes that. You know, whether they have the vocabulary to say it, they do internalize that, and they ask, what's wrong with me? You know, what's going on with me? So they blame themselves, and that can affect behavior as well, because then you've got self-esteem issues and just their concept of sense of self is affected.
Mm-hmm. And that's what I don't want. I don't want my son to feel the way that his father feels about his father. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want that. I want him to be a part of his life. My son is his sixth child. He has four boys, two girls. And his older two boys, they have, you know, great relationships from what I can tell. Mind you, I've known them forever. So I kind of know a little bit about their relationships, and I've seen a little bit about their, you know, their relationships. And they seem to have a great relationship. It's just, I don't know what it is. Maybe he's too young. Maybe our son is too young. He's three, almost four. I don't know what it is. But even trying to talk to his dad, it's like not really get anywhere. It's like he shuts down, and I'm not trying to place blame, point fingers and things, but I just really would like to get to know what it is. You know what I mean? Like, I really would like to get to know what it is. And I've asked, I've talked to him, but I don't really get anywhere. So I don't know. I just feel like I just need to separate the two, and we need to go on with our lives, and maybe one day he's ready to be a dad and a father, and there's the difference, you know, then he can come in and possibly see what it is. But I don't know, because right now I feel like my son, being as young as he is, he really needs to focus on him and learning how to be him in a sense, and how to treat other people. And I don't want that to rub off negatively on him and his self-esteem and his spirit, because it does decorate his spirit. You know, it really does. On top of that, we look like stereotypes already. We're already stereotypes. We're single moms, you know, black single moms at that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's just one more thing. He went to a school. The school is what actually suggested us going to behavioral therapy, and I'm very grateful to the school for that, because I really had no idea. You know, it's my first child. I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm just, you know, like you said earlier, there's no manual. You're winging it. You know, and I say it, you're just winging it, you know? And it's true. You really don't know unless you're, like, trained or, you know, you have that type of background, educational background. You really don't know. And even still, there are parents that are therapists that, you know, children kind of run all over them or, you know, anything like that. It's always like that. Like, you have the preacher's daughter who's not so Christian-like, or, you know what I mean?
It's not always like that.
Not always, but you do have that.
Yeah, you do have some of that going on. I have our middle child is 25, and our youngest is 12. We have a 12-year-old, a 25-year-old, and a 28-year-old. And I'm a former teacher. I was a classroom teacher, and I was also a social worker, and now I'm a consultant. And I did some children's therapy for a while, too, with kids that have been through trauma. And it's interesting that having the 25-year-old, when he was in school, and at this point I was an administrator, or teacher, rather, a classroom teacher, and he, you know, he had behavior problems coming up with the staff. You know, it's like, well, my mom teaches here. My mom does that. So we saw some behavior problems there. But as a general rule, having the experience that I have, it did, you know, the education also, along with the experience, did change the way I parented based mm-hmm. on also what I experienced as a child. I feel like I'm the total opposite of what I went through as a child. And I was raised really well, and I turned out great. But, you know, my parents are a little more punitive, you know, in their punishments, and I'm not. But I raised a really responsible, you know, people think, you don't spank your kids? You never spanked your kids? I'm like, no. And when I say I raise royalty and I treat my children like royalty, that's mm-hmm. what I do. And, you know, they comply. I never had to worry about them in public. They're like, they don't throw tantrums. You know, my Benjamin is the 25-year-old. He never threw tantrums in public. Well, he didn't throw them really at home either. He would have a little attitude, but we worked that out. And then when mm-hmm. he went in those teenage years, then you know, when they're teenagers, you want to send them off to an island somewhere and let them come back when they're adults. That's boys and girls. But that mm-hmm. little short period of preteens to teens, and then, you know, by the time he's 15, 16 years old, it worked itself out. And now he's 25, and I couldn't ask for better. And the 12-year-old, I'm doing the same thing, you know, pretty much. The 12-year-old has special needs. So I parent a little differently, but for the most part I do the same, and I have the same compliance, and he does the same out in public as well. So I think sometimes it does help when you do have a background of teaching and working with kids, and you see the, you know, the nuances of children, and you have to have a relationship with your kids. And I think that's what's happening is we're so busy. You know, there's working moms. If you're single, you have to go and work, and then you don't get to spend as much time with your child as you would like to. And you don't get that connection that kids really need to help. Because when a child knows that you respect them and love them unconditionally, they will give you the world. They will do anything to please you.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree. I do agree that having a background in education changed the way or helped to shape the way that I raise my kids, because you see a lot in the classroom. When you're in that classroom, you see a lot. You experience a lot. You experience things that you don't want to experience. You hear stories you don't want to hear. And it definitely affected the way I treated my child and the way I raised my child, because I did not want my child to become a statistic. I know that there is a prison cell made, well, 4 prison cells made for every black male born, and my child was not going to be one of those statistics.
That's right. Now,
he is in training as a Marine. And he's 23 years old. I've never had the police knocking on my door, even though I said we went through all those, you know, terrible ADHD behavioral issues. I never had issues with him, like you said, acting out in public, because I don't like embarrassment, so that was never going to happen. Neither with my daughter.
You do not embarrass a black mother.
No, I can't handle it. I really can't handle it. So one of the things that we did, that I did constantly, is if we were going somewhere, we pulled up in the parking lot of the mall, I would stop and I'll turn around to him and I'm like, what are the rules? You know, because this was a routine, because like I told you, I had to learn how to do behavioral modification. So, you know, you constantly reinforcing rules, you know, and talking to them on a regular basis, having that open communication, like you said, you know, letting them know that, not that I'm your friend, but that I'm your mom and you can trust me and you can tell me anything, you know, and we can have any type of conversation that you need to have. Come to me first before you go to a friend. And I always have open communication with my kids, because I do not want my child getting information from people who are, I think I made a post about that the other day. You asked the question, Jennifer, and I think that's what I said. I don't want my child getting someone else's twisted version of reality. I always make sure that I have that open communication. But when we would pull up in the small parking lot, one of the things I would do is like, okay, so what are we not going to do and what are we going to do when we get in there? So we're not going to act a fool. We're not going to run around and scream and, you know, like throw a tantrum. If mommy says you can't have something, you just can't have it. There's a reason. We can talk about it after we leave, you know, or this is the amount of money you can spend when you get it. So you set boundaries, you set, you know, expectations for your children. And I think once you do that, then, you know, life just becomes a lot easier, because you have an understanding.
True.
You know what I mean? But you have to tell them.
Yeah.
I know there are some parents who don't want to have, like, conversations about bills and money and that type of stuff with their children. I think the more open you are with your kids about what's actually going on in your household, the better off you are. You know, like, I never hide from my kids. Like, they knew how much I paid for my mortgage every month, what the car note was. Not that I had to tell them, but, I mean, you're going to grow up. I used to teach a life skills class. In the summer, that's one of the things I did in the summer, was I taught an entrepreneurship and life skills class for teenagers. And these were like juniors, seniors. And a lot of them had no clue about the finances in their household. All they were told, I can't afford it. You know, and kids like, or you can't have it. I think you need to have more open conversations with your children about what's really going on. If you can't afford it, tell them you can't afford it and break down what the bills look
and
like.
Here's why.
And what you can, you know, be realistic with them. They didn't know how to open bank accounts. Like, we just need to have more open conversations with our children, you know?
Right.
I agree.
You know, I've gotten to the point with my teenager when she, you know, like she came in the room the other day and she said, you know, the Wi-Fi is really slow. And I said, oh, okay, well, you know, the bill was $300. If you need a better Wi-Fi plan, you can go research it and you can pay for it. And she just looked at me like, wait, what? Exactly. Like, I can't. You know, because I think that, you know, children naturally have a sense of entitlement, right? Because we give them.
Yes.
They don't work for things. They don't understand the value of how much this shirt costs. And, you know, they get it. And to a degree, that's how it should be. But at the same time, there has to be a learning curve, you know, and we just have to find a way to do it. You know, like with my daughter, I noticed her dad buys her Jordans, you know, and I'm not that parent. Like, it's not going down. I'm not spending $200 on a pair of shoes. There's too many of you for this nonsense. But, you know, that's what her dad wants to do, and that's fine. But I notice, you know, now she's, you know, last year middle school, and, you know, she's, like, swapping shoes with other kids, and then they're not taking care of them. You know, like, this girl wore her shoes and came back, and they were, like, dirty. Really, really dirty, like almost like she wore them for 2 weeks in the dirt, right? And so it was a great lesson. I was like, so why would you give your shoes to someone else? Well, because she wanted to wear them. Okay, but now look at the situation you're in. Like, how does that benefit you? Like, she has a mother and a father, and they buy her what they want her to have. So if they didn't buy her these shoes, they didn't want her to have them. And it's not your responsibility to give them to her. So if you like your things and you like your things nice, which you do, I would suggest in the future that you don't do this. You know, and they have, because don't come looking to me to buy you a new pair of shoes, because I'm going to say, sorry, you had a great pair. You chose to destroy them, so I don't know what to tell you now. You know,
and that's great. You allowed her those natural consequences. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, that's what we're doing right now. We have a good listening jar that we're filling up with pom-poms, and he has, like, five different levels of things that he can attain from getting, you know, being a good listener. So on Saturday, I took him on a boat ride in San Pedro, and we went on this boat ride because he was a good listener. He filled it up to the line of, you know, where we were supposed to go on the boat ride, and we went. He had a great time. He'd never been on a boat before, so he was really excited to see the water, the big gray ships with the thick containers on it. This is his description. And he was really excited. And it's cool because when he does do things around the house, like we do clean up and he helps me take his clothes out of the, you know, the dryer and the washer and things like that, I still give him pom-poms. When he's good at school, I give him pom-poms. It was funny because something happened the other day at school on Monday, and his friend and him, they were playing, and the teacher told me they were playing, and his friend hit him on the arm, and then my son hit the kid back. And he told me the teacher said that it wasn't, you know, it wasn't that big of a deal. I think it was more of a reflux than anything. And Tuesday morning when we were going to school, my son said, Mommy, he hit me. I really didn't like it. And I said, well, did you tell him that? He said, no, but I hit him back. I said, okay. But you have to tell people how you feel. So that's what we're working on more, even more now, because he is getting older. He's well aware of what's kind of going on around him as much as he can, you know, basically take in. He knows things. You know, he's very in tune and he's very observant, always has been. So I do want to make sure that I have that to reinforce, is to make sure that you understand your feelings and talk about your feelings, because those things are important. And, you know, he's a very loving kid. He's very kind. He loves animals. He wants all the hugs from all his friends. And he feels good where he is in the school that he's in now, especially. And I think that being that he's in a newer environment because we changed schools, it's really helped him a lot, and it's really made it a little easier. On top of that, this new school year, over the summer, they actually got a male teacher. So he has a little bit of someone where he can relate to and things like that. So I think those, knowing the consequences, he's right now he's really interested in for whatever reason. I have no idea why, but he's really interested in cactus. And the other day I saw a video of this man that jumped into a cactus. And, of course, we all know what happened. He was hollering. He had, you know, the needle stuck in him, and the people were trying to help the man get the needle stuck out. And my son saw the video. He was like, Mommy, why did he jump in the cactus? I said, he made a really bad choice. It was a bad idea. He made a really bad decision. And so, therefore, it hurt his body. Because he has this really this newfound love for cactus. He wants to touch cactus. I said, you can touch. He's like, but we can only touch the green part. You're right. And, you know, I try to get him to understand, like, it's all about the choices that you make. You know what I mean? Like, you chose today. We were coming home from school. He said his friend put a pair of safety scissors in his mouth. And I said, oh, that was a bad choice. You know, he said, it was, Mommy. He could hurt his body. Exactly. You know what can happen when you make these types of choices. These are the consequences for your actions. So I'm trying to really instill that into him now, and that's kind of where we were in therapy prior to us having our first therapist. That's what we were doing. That's what we were working towards, with him expressing himself, learning his feelings, and being rewarded for being a good listener. So when you were talking about, Tracy, about how, you know, your kids go, you have the rules when you get into the parking lot at the store, you know, we go to Target. He now wants to go to the toy section all the time. He is a car freak. Like, I feel like we have every Hot Wheel imaginable in my house. It's just in my house. We have multiple cars. There are Hot Wheels in the cars, trunks, in the drawers. They're everywhere. And I tell him, I'm like, hey, Mommy doesn't have money to cars right now. And, you know, you can go and look, but we're not buying any cars. We're going to leave them for the next little boy or girl who might want to buy a car. So he knows. He doesn't ask. He doesn't flip out when I say that. He knows, okay, well, Mommy, I want this for my birthday. And by him knowing his birthday, he's like, oh, my birthday's coming up. So what I do now is I take him, we go to the toy section in Target. He'll take a picture of something that he wants for his birthday. So, you know, that kind of helps get away from that in the sense of tantrum. I want it, or the pouty face, or anything like that. So it helps, and just like you said, talking about it prior to, it really does help. And letting kids know, like, what the situation is, more specifically than, hey, you just can't have it. Well, why not? You know what I mean? Being more specific, I've learned definitely with him. And even when I was a kid, you know, my mom was very open about what we were going through financially and beyond. So it was very helpful to where, you know, you kind of know the expectations. I know what's going on to where you do have that boundary, and you know what's going on to where this expected of you. So, yeah, I think it's all very valid. All very valid.
Right, right. So before we end, I want to give practical. And I think, you know, you just gave a couple, April, with, you know, the rewards and the visible tracking of the behavior. I want to give everybody a chance to give maybe two practical things that moms can do to help with the behavior issues. So let's start with Tracy.
Okay, so my two is teach your child to be reflective. So how to reflect on their behavior will give them a sense of ownership of that behavior, and will teach them how to I like to call it self-soothing, but how not to to get themselves into that situation again. And with reflection, you can instill a reward system, because I believe in rewards. That's something I did with my son often. You know, I don't expect perfection from you, but my reward system would be if I don't get a complaint from the teacher every day about you not sitting in your seat during quiet time or during a lesson, then you can have a treat on Friday, you know. But it wasn't that, you know, you can't expect perfection. So your reward system cannot be based on perfection. It has to be based on a percentage level. So if you are 50%, you know, you have to start slowly. So if it's 5 days in a week, if you were good one or two out of the 5 days, then you can get X on Friday, you know, and then you can move it up at slowly, day, you know, month after month. Then, you know, move it up to 50% of the time, then 75%. It's never going to get to 100%, hardly ever. Does it ever get to 100%? Because they're going to slip up, but I believe those are two of the good ones. Teach your child to be reflective on their behaviors,
and use that reflection to negate the behavior from happening again. You know, like I used to tell my son, you control your brain. Your brain doesn't control you. And then make sure you have a reward system. Yeah.
I think that's a good one. You control your brain.
Yeah.
Your brain does not control you. I'm going to have to say that.
That was our motto every day. Remember, who controls the brain? You know, that was something I said every day to him. You control your brain. Your brain does not control you. Because that's the symptom of ADHD. They like to tell kids, you know, your brain triggers you to do X, Y, and Z. But no, you have to learn how to control your brain. And he does it even now as an adult. He has learned how to quiet that behavior or that those triggers. He's learned his triggers and he knows how to turn it off. You know, like he'll come to me and he'll start talking and he'll ramble on and he'll go from like five different conversations all mixed together and I'll sit and I'll just smile at him and he's like, I'm doing it, aren't I? And then he'll stop himself and then he will literally, it's like a reset button. You know, and then he'll just go back and just start with the one conversation that he started with, finish that conversation, and then move on to something else. So it's you can retrain the brain to do what you want it to do. But like I said, you control your brain, not your brain controlling you. That's why that motto came up. So,
well, I like it. I like it.
Yeah.
I do like that too.
So, April, do you have, I mean, I know you started this, but...
We'll
give you a chance if you have.
I mean, those are the main things that we're using right now. The Good Listening Jar has actually been very, very helpful. Like I said before, I do let him know, you know, if the teacher, I'm the same way. If the teacher, you know, has good reports and you get your pom-poms in your jar and then, you know, the next thing that we're going to do is go to the Natural History Museum. He wants to see the dinosaur bones again. So that's something that he's working towards, and I think that it's really cool because he does get rewarded for doing something positive, you know, and being a good listener is a great thing. Like I tell him all the time, it's really just me and you, you know, it's me, you, and grandma, yes, but it's really me and you. So I let him know, hey, this is what it is, and you got to kind of fall in line with it. You got to learn how to be a good listener. You have to learn how to have a calm body, have a calm voice, things like that. Also, label praises. I learned that in therapy as well, which have been really awesome because that once I found out that that's what it is, that kind of makes them feel like you're hearing them or paying attention to them. You know, it's funny, the new therapist came yesterday. She said, oh, I hear that you're giving him a lot of label praises. Yes, that's been a part of our therapy for the past year almost. So, for sure, I'm making sure that I do that, and I keep that, and now it's really a part of our daily, just daily life, you know. I just always, you know, oh, Peter, it's really good. You did a great job with flipping your car, or, you know what I mean, just make sure that you're specific so they'll know that you're actually paying attention to them. So I would say have something, a reward system in place, and definitely pay attention to them and repeat back what they say, reflect back what they say to you. You know, and just be open. Be open. It's important to be open, even from a young age. Be open because they're very smart. They catch on very, very quickly. So, yeah, those are my things.
Okay. So now, Miss Alisa.
Well, I think two things that really help is, first of all, that you have to have clear ground rules and be consistent in enforcing those rules and not be afraid to let your child experience a natural consequence where you don't have to dish out a punishment. Life does it itself. So having those rules is very important. And the other thing we need to remember when children are misbehaving, you know, it's often because they don't have the language to describe what they're feeling. So the second thing is that I would say is to help your child put those feelings into words, modeling it, asking it. If it's a younger child, you want to have a visual chart, you know, with some faces and different names and numbers on it so they can rate, you know, like a scale rating when you go in the hospital kind of a thing. And the older child, you're just sitting down having a conversation. So clear ground rules, being consistent with enforcing them, and helping your child put those feelings into words.
Okay.
I agree.
I've I think these ladies have had an awesome conversation. They've given us some valuable practical tips as well as actually she's been up. Just some great knowledge that we can take away and use. But before we end today's before we end today's episode, I want to give each of you ladies, if you like, the opportunity to let our listeners know where they can reach you, where they can find you, how they can connect with you, if they like to connect with you to get more information or work with you. So let's start with Miss April. I know you're not, you know, an educational expert, but if you want to share.
I'm on Facebook. Facebook.com/AprilSAMHicks. That's my handle for Facebook. You can inbox me. I do check the request because I know, you know, Facebook is kind of trippy when it's people that you don't know. So I do check the message request. You can message me anytime. I am on Instagram. It's more so personal, but you can still follow me. It's Boolicious, Boolicious 729. That's my personal. Just drop me a message and let me know, you know who it is because it's private. But that's it.
Okay. Miss Tracy?
I can be found at www.tracyvallen.com. That's T-R-A-C-Y, V as in Victoria, A-L-L-E-N.com. Although I focus mostly on nonprofit organizations right now, I still do educational consulting when needed, not my focus right now. You can find me there if you want to talk. If you, you know, whatever you need, you can get me at my website.
I would like to add that she is the nonprofit like master. So if you have a nonprofit or are thinking about getting a nonprofit, you might want to reach out to Tracy.
Awesome.
And Miss Lisa?
Hi. Yes, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/A as in Apple, G as in girl, AG Educational. And my phone number is 855-483-2621. And just to let all of your listeners know that we do have a 7-day challenge coming up in October, and this is a behavioral challenge. We guarantee your child's behavior will change within the 7-day challenge. And I would like to welcome anybody that registers and says that they listen to your broadcast. They can sign up for free.
Oh, okay. So does this challenge work on teenagers?
It's a 7-day behavioral challenge that starts October the 8th and runs through that Saturday, and it's going to be all online on Facebook.
Okay.
And anyone that mentions SAGE will get in free.
Okay. So, hey, now you guys got a freebie.
Oh,
now you have a reason. No reason not to get it together, right? Thank you for that. And, I mean, those of you who don't know, I am Miss Jennifer Pink, known affectionately as a Single Mom Sage, and you can find me on all social media at Miss Jennifer Pink, MSJENNIFER, pink like the color, because I am painting the world pink. And, of course, you can always reach me on my website, www.misspinksworld.com. And before we get out of here, I want to let everybody know to make sure you we have a baby, and she wants to say hi in her special way. Make sure you like, heart, and follow Sage Network via Sage Mentoring on all social media. Check out our website at sagesinglemoms.net. And until next time, we wish you love, peace, baby powder freshness, and make sure you raise them babies without the drama. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you.
Good night. Bye, guys.